Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Faith Church Podcast. I am your host, Jay Williams. Joining me today is Christoph Katzbeck.
Hey, Jay.
You really jumped in there.
Yeah.
I barely even said the K of Katzbeck, and you were
just excited to be here.
You're just so excited.
I'm just excited to be
chomping
here.
At the bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a great Thanksgiving. I think like a lot of the people in our church, it sounds like at least we had, just kind of like colds hit our family. So we were battling with, head colds and like, what are we going to do? What are we not going to do? And it ended up being nice. It ended up being a little bit more low key. I think one of the highlights for me was just that we ended up like kind of having three mini Thanksgivings in terms of like family. Mm-hmm. We had like the main Thursday Thanksgiving with some family. And then Friday we did like leftovers and that became like a Thanksgiving meal. And then Saturday we drove down to Appleton, to go visit Max and Charisse and did a little Thanksgiving meal with them. And it was cool. It was full and I liked it. So how was yours?
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when you said Friday is like a Thanksgiving meal, to me, the best meal is Friday lunch.
Yeah, the leftovers.
Yeah, I love that.
But we didn't do like I feel like when you say leftovers, you think of like turkey sandwiches, you think of like taking what you made and you use a different vehicle.
Tell me what I think.
It's just what I'm, imagine.
We
didn't do that though. We just did like straight up same plates of food.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, that's Friday. I don't do like... The sandwich thing, that's usually a Friday dinner.
Okay.
But Friday lunch is all the things that, like, I just recreate whatever I made on Thursday.
2.0.
Yeah, let me ask you this. So it's Friday. Imagine it's Friday. Are you a rookie?
I didn't slurp.
We'll take a poll.
Oh,
the people
goodness.
Heard
all
slurping.
Right. I did not slurp.
Like the wave form. I'm looking at the wave form.
You're looking at a lot of waveforms.
Yeah, but the slurp was obvious. All right, so if I can... amateurs. If you're on Friday, what is the item that if it's not there for leftovers, you're sad? Like, what's the...
That's a good question. Two immediately come to mind, and they're the same color.
Well, that's like everything on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's fair. Sweet potatoes and pumpkin pie.
Sweet potatoes and pumpkin pie.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So yeah. So if that's there, you're okay with leftovers.
Yeah.
Like whatever. But if those aren't there, you're like,
I'll be a little disappointed.
Happened?
Yeah.
What happened to those?
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, thanks for asking. It's green bean casserole, I would say.
Oh man, I cannot stand green bean casserole. I can't. I actually got a phone call. So Thursday morning, I go to the gym and
I feel like you're interrupting mine, but go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
It relates to green bean casserole. And if I get an opportunity to throw my brother-in-law under the bus, I'm going to do it.
Did anybody notice a slurp there? That's how you drink coffee in a podcast. Like
Literally
right by the microphone.
Anyways, Thursday, get done working out and I had everything planned, especially after your message.
Just took another sip.
I think it was like a week and a half ago. You need to calm down. A week and a half ago, I think you had mentioned something about not shopping on Thanksgiving. Am I imagining that?
I did say that. Yeah.
You did. And I felt so prepared. I was like, okay, we don't need to do anything. I specifically asked Sarah on Wednesday. And as I'm coming back home from the gym, my brother-in-law knows that I am coming back and he calls me and I'm like a block away from home. And he goes, hey, are you out and about? Like, are you going to make me go to the store? He's like, I need French fried onions for the green bean casserole. It's like, oh. So not only did I have to go to the store, but I had to go and get like an ingredient for a food that
so
to
let me
is
just
like
say,
the worst.
Let me say this. There's no excuse for not having those ready because that should be front. Like, would you forget? That would be like somebody calling you and saying, "Ooh, are you out and about? Could you stop and get a turkey?"
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It is
Thank
so,
you. Yes.
It is so French fried onions for the green bean casserole is so critical that it's like forgetting the turkey.
Yeah.
You said you didn't like green bean casserole.
I don't, but I know that it's a thing.
So I'm saying that's first and foremost. However, if you found on Thanksgiving morning that you had forgotten to get a turkey, then you have no choice but to get it.
You got
to
get
Same
it.
Same
with
French fried onions. You can't. So the fried onions on there,
That's why I went. I went, so.
Those are the, that for me, so back to the
back
original
to you. Yeah,
question.
Yeah.
goodness.
Green bean casserole.
The green bean casserole and I would say normally stuffing, but really green bean casserole and Jell-O salad.
Ooh, yeah.
But it's my family's recipe, Jell-O salad.
Right, of course.
Which is kind of weird. And Lauren,
what flavor Jell-O?
It's like strawberry Jell-O with strawberries in it and applesauce, basically.
Yeah.
Is what it's made of. And Lauren thought it was weird when she first made it. And there's also a cranberry thing. I don't like cranberry sauce, but I do like, we make this fluffy, we. It's a
careful
corporate. It's a corporate
effort. Of course,
effort,
yeah, team effort, yeah.
Team effort. Someone makes like a whipped.
There is food.
Like a whipped cream, cranberry, fluffy marshmallow thing that is really good.
Okay,
I can see that. That's like the only, I think it's
the only vehicle by which you like cranberries?
Maybe it's not cranberries.
Hey, okay, question about the green bean casserole really quick, and then we should really like
get
on track.
Go ahead.
Are you one of those people who like it cold or do you warm it up?
I prefer it warm.
Okay.
I mean, here's the key. The bummer is whenever you microwave it, it's...
It loses a little bit of something, right?
It loses the crisp,
right?
You know, from seeing sprinkle some more of the...
The French fried onions, yeah.
But no, I like it heated. So this was like the act of love and sacrifice for my son was he also loves it. Like Silas loves the green bean casserole. We're the two that love it.
Yeah.
And I saved the last bit for him.
Ugh, what a good dad.
And he appreciated it. It was like I couldn't have bought him a better Christmas present. Like it was full appreciation of the magnitude of the moment.
You can make a Hallmark movie on that.
Well,
call it like the green bean casserole.
I saw a creative Hallmark movie over the weekend too.
Really?
Yeah. It's funny. It was based on real events actually. So it went off Hallmark script. They tried to steer it back and make it kind of more Hallmarky, but it was interesting. We need to get moving.
Anyway, this is
another long one of Thanksgiving. So, you know, it'd be interesting. I wish if we took live calls right now, we would say, what's the leftover
caller?
Makes your Friday lunch that without it, you're like, why bother?
You're going to get people like filling out in the communication cards.
That would be so great.
Communication cards.
I would love that just for the
like
sake
live
of
polling.
So Leslie goes through the communication cards at staff meeting.
If people just wrote down.
If that was it, I just want to see her facial expression.
It'd be so good. She's got a
stack.
So
here's the thing. Leslie doesn't listen to the podcast.
No.
She barely listens to me on a daily basis. So she's certainly not listening to a recorded version of me. But since she wouldn't hear this, that's what I'm going to ask. Next week at worship on Sunday, fill out a communication card and put your favorite leftover, like your favorite Thanksgiving dish leftover. Just so I can experience Leslie going, why do I have a card that says dressing? Why do I have a card that says mashed potatoes? What? I don't understand. It'd be so great.
That'd be great. Anyway, speaking of favorites, we just finished James.
Listen, I'm the transition guy here.
Well, you weren't transitioning, so I was trying to help you out here.
James. So you wrapped up James.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
It was. I was
not
really...
that the sermon is great, but it was fun to wrap up. It was fun to wrap up James. I just went totally like big picture on it and just thought I'd throw a bunch of.
For Sunday?
Yeah, for Sunday. Yeah. That was tough because it was like, I thought, well, I want to do a recap. And then I decided to do a recap where I just quoted a bunch of James.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something powerful when you realize, hey, this is clearly like these are major themes in James that he addresses over and over and over again.
Yeah, we were talking before we turned on the mics about what kind of our favorite or what our takeaways, I guess, were from James, because I feel like whenever we finish a sermon series, there's kind of like this, like, I don't know if you have this moment of just kind of reflecting back on the messages and reflecting back on kind of studying through it and thinking through. And I was really like, I thought your message did a great job of articulating what I felt like God had really impressed on me over the last couple of months of how James is like really this, like this letter to the church. Cause I think I've always read it as like this, like specifically to me, I've read it very selfishly and instead of the grander picture of like the church together collectively being, this group that reflect who Jesus called us to be. And I think James really captured that. And I like that to me was one of those, just, it really stood out to me throughout the whole message, the whole series.
I think that's one of those cultural things that we don't realize how strange that would be to the original authors. I mean, you have to remember these are letters that are read all at once to a group of people. They don't have individual copies for themselves. They aren't all taking it home and doing individual studies with it. So it's primarily meant for a corporate audience.
Yeah, the collective, the church, yeah, right. The body, yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I feel it's a weird tension, though, because there are certainly, when you read through it, like, you know, we're going through prayer, and it's like, yeah, you individually do need to spend time in prayer. But then as you read through it again, you're like, well, we as a body, like, what good would it be if, you know, you're thinking of a body, if just the finger did what the finger was supposed to do, but the elbow, you know, wasn't moving. It would be weird. And like, that is, I don't know. I agree. That is definitely a, I don't know. It's a cultural thing that we struggle with.
Yeah. And when we struggle with that, then it loses a lot of the meaning, really. Like it does a couple of things. One is it makes us very, we lose the one another's. We lose the whole point that we are meant to stir one another up to good works, that we're supposed to hold one another accountable. We're supposed to encourage one another, all those different things that we are meant to do together as a community. But we also lose the power and the joy of the communal effect of this. But it also, like, it allows us to interpret things in really strange ways. You know, like, it allows us to more easily kind of explain away a verse or ignore something or whatever, because we're like, oh, that's not an issue for me or whatever. And we don't think about it as a collective, like whether it's prayer or, you know, warnings or cautions that James gives, or the push for caring for the widows and the orphans, or whatever the case is. Like, we just miss out on so much when we make it very, when we over-personalize it. It is, like you said, it is personal, but it's personal then as a part of a collective. So,
yeah. So let me ask you this, because those last two verses, James 5:19-20, you could have gone the route of very personal, right? So the whole concept was, hey, if you see a brother or sister wandering, go and restore them. Like, go, you know, and like you said you started Sunday morning, you talked about that, and then you transitioned towards the greater responsibility for one another as a whole, rather than just these two people going, like, we together have this responsibility, and like, when we act this way, this is when we are salt and light. This is when we are, like, what caused you to say, that's the direction I want to go in with this wrap up, rather than just sticking to the idea of, well, it could have just been a message about, you know, holding someone accountable. It could have just been a message about, calling someone else's sin. Instead, there was a greater, I don't know if this is the right word to use or not, but holistic idea of, like, what does it mean to be the church together than just this, like, this small microcosm. Why did you go that direction?
I think it's so, like, part of my philosophy of preaching, which I'm not alone in having this philosophy of preaching. I think it's, I feel like it's gone a little bit out of style, but the idea that the text says what it says, and the author has a, like, there's an intention to what is being said, but there's also an audience that is hearing it. And preaching is very, I mean, as you know, and other people may not know this, but I believe in the very localized view of preaching, that the proclamation of God's word is meant for a specific people in a specific time. And so if I did think about going down the road of, okay, what does it look like to hold somebody accountable? How do you win them back? How do you, like, you know, what does that look like in a way that's not judgmental? And I could have even used that with, you know, the rest of James to inform how that would even look. And I did a little bit, but I just kept being struck with this idea that the last thing I wanted to do in a culture that tends to view all of these things so individually. The last thing I wanted to do was give another individual example. I wanted to show how this is really about a community that is shaped by the Holy Spirit, formed in God's revelation of himself to us, that we're formed into his image together collectively. And realizing that if we do that, like if we function in that way, that if then a lot of those other things start to take care of themselves. Because the immediate thing that's going to happen when it's like, okay, well, if you win somebody back, or if you bring them back who's wandering, there's going to first be a diffusion of responsibility, right? Like, who am I actually supposed to take responsibility? And it actually creates an environment where the fewer people you feel like that you're in community with, the less conviction you're going to feel about bringing somebody who's wandering back. Like,
yeah,
essentially I'm going to get like, if I went the direction that you were talking about there, like, why didn't I do that? I think that that might hit like 5% of our congregation. You're probably going to talk about, an adult or a parent of an adult child who has wandered. And so that would be a person who would be thinking strongly about, like,
sure, yeah,
how this person has wandered. You know, another family member, a close friend, a spouse. But it's going to be somebody that you're already thinking about, like, going into that. And so that person doesn't really need encouragement. Like, that person needs the encouragement of knowing this is a communal effort. Right. So like, it's not just you going out on a seek, you know, and search and rescue mission, that we're in this together. So that person needs to know that. And then the person who doesn't have that specific person in their life needs to realize like how they're a part of this bigger picture and part of this greater thing. And that it's not just about their own individual faith and their own individual pursuit of Jesus, that we all kind of bear responsibility. So I really wanted to take that theme of like, it's a little bit like when Jesus talks about, like, when they say, who's my neighbor? I was kind of thinking in those terms of, well, when they ask Jesus that, Jesus doesn't say like, oh, well, you know, the person that you know that you should be loving towards. Well, that's going to hit a very small percentage of people.
Right.
He gives an example and a story that awakens everyone's sense of responsibility for people around them. And so I wanted to raise, like, awaken people's sense of communal responsibility, but also raise their confidence in the community to aid in that. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
both
yeah.
raises the responsibility level, but also decreases some of the personal pressure, because you realize, okay, I'm calling people back into this community. I'm not just like going and trying to fix this person's sin. Cause that's another thing that it kind of sometimes can go into, is like, oh, you're doing this wrong thing. It's my job now to go and fix you and
right.
get you back on the straight and narrow. And that's not exactly what James is talking about
there. No, especially within the context of the whole book, which is where you ended up going was, you know, in the context of this, like, this really is a communal effort. And I think one of the things that really struck me, so I'm thinking about the person who might be listening right now, and they might go like, I still don't know who that person is, or I don't feel that. And maybe I don't feel like I have those sort of people in my life who would do that. You know, we sometimes get that, where we have somebody who's like, hey, I haven't been to church for a while and I haven't heard from anyone, or this or that. And I'm so struck by, the fact that James, part of James is very like actionable. There's a lot of like, this is what we are called to do. And I think that when we are on mission together, when we are God's family on mission, like, we feel responsibility for one another when we are on mission together. We have a mutual goal, right? We have this like mutual destination that we are trying to get to, which is, you know, to glorify God, to love others, to make him known, to live this life together. And I would say, like, man, I don't know if you would agree with this or not agree with this, but I would say, if you feel like you're hearing that, and you're hearing part of that, like, I don't necessarily know if I have that person who I'm responsible for, I don't feel like I'm a part of a family of, like, my question would be like, how are you being a part of that family? How are you, like, there's a lot of avenues to do that, to be a part of that family. What does that make sense? Like, with the the being on mission together sparks that responsibility for one another?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I guess I would say one thing to that I would say is, yes, if it awakens, like if you ask the question of, is there anybody in your life, specifically in the church? So if you're part of our church, is there anybody in the church that you would say, if they wandered, I would feel a sense of responsibility to try to bring
them back?
Yeah,
that's a good question, yeah.
And if there's nobody in the church that you would feel that responsibility for, then that's a problem. So that would be one thing. But I also think it's important to realize, and this is what we talk about when we talk about in preaching, you know, it's not a Bible study. So there are preachers out there who have the philosophy of whatever the main text, main point of the passage is, that should be the main point of the sermon. And I understand that and I appreciate that style, but I think it's often used as a straw man, like against another ditch, which is the other side is the contrast that they'll use to that is when someone uses it as like a springboard to whatever the preacher wants to talk about. So it's, you know, you could say in this, like, my brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. So a way of making that like the main point, or like the launch, like, let me say, the springboard sermon on that could be like going off on a tangent about truth. Like, what is truth? And then just going through like all, you know, talking about truth. That's not the main point of that Jesus is, or that James is talking about here. But also, though, I would say the main point here is not about going and bringing someone back. The main point of these couple of verses is just talking about the seriousness of wandering. And it's calling back to the Sermon of the Mount, a Sermon on the Mount of you cannot serve two masters, building your house on the rock. It really is a conclusion statement, which I wish I could have gone more into, but I see a lot of parallels between this statement and the Jesus talking about the building your house on the rock versus the sand. Like, he's saying that like the main point of this is about the effect of the wandering. It's, you know, he's talking about that yes, he's in the context of someone being brought back, but he's saying this is what you're saving them from. Like, it matters. A person who wanders is wandering away and they aren't known by God. Like, they're not, this isn't like someone wanders and you say like, well, nobody's perfect. He's saying, listen, if somebody wanders away, they are going away from God. Right. And they are departing from God. And so bringing them back is not just a matter of like doing a nice thing for them. Like, it literally saves their soul. And so there's a weightiness to the wandering that is the main point. So this isn't a charge. And I think, you know, I could have clarified this too, but whatever, that's what a podcast is for. But I don't think this is a charge from James of like, hey, everybody, go find the wanderers. This isn't like a leave the 99 to go find the one kind of charge. This is just a heaviness of all these things that I've instructed you in really matter. This is about what kingdom you are a part of. Do you, if you believe and if you are a part of God's kingdom, then your life will demonstrate that. It'll show up in how you treat other people. It'll show up in how you face trials. It'll show up in your character and your demeanor. And this is the definition of what it looks like to live this life. And then at the end, if you wander, if anybody wanders away from living this life in the kingdom, you are headed for destruction. And so if a person brings them back, like, he's just using that, I think, to illustrate the importance of wandering back and then a sense of communal responsibility. Does that make sense? So it's not a like missionary charge. All right, everybody, go find the wanderer. It's not that. This is the effect of wandering from this, what I've taught you.
Right. That wasn't what I was trying to get at. I was more.
Don't argue with me on a podcast.
Of course I'm going to argue. What I was trying to say is there's an implication. There is an implication exactly with what you said.
Yeah.
That person was a part of this family to see them wandering.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah. I totally agree with you. And I would say that, like, what makes that family then, or what like helps you to see when somebody is wandering, is by being on mission together. So when I say being on mission, I'm not saying be on mission to like go and find all the people who have labeled themselves Christians on Facebook but aren't living a Christian lifestyle and make sure to tell them that they are the worst. Like, I'm not saying do that. What I'm saying is we are on mission together, being salt and light. And while we are doing that, that's when we are holding each other accountable. That's when we are being responsible for one another in a way where we can tell when we are wandering, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying with that, of like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying you weren't saying that, Christoph. This is gonna get really awkward.
This is weird. You're strawmanning me.
I'm just saying that if I was trying to get across two main points. One is, what is the thing? I wanted to clarify, or at least, it probably sounds funny to say clarify because I often feel like I make things more complicated.
What?
But like, I wanna clarify, what is the way that a person might be wandering from?
Yeah.
So part of the issue is we don't notice wandering because we don't know what wandering is, because we've just allowed all kinds of cultural narratives to get meshed in with the gospel. So now all of a sudden it doesn't look like wandering when we are exhibiting greed or pride or gossip or any of those things. That doesn't feel like wandering to us. So
yeah,
that's
true.
That is one big issue with the wandering, is what is like, let's purify, like all the listeners can see me holding out my hands.
Right. you're sitting here holding that. I'm like, there's no video on you, Jay.
No, I know. But like, I'm picturing like, if whatever the truth is, like the gospel and the kingdom, the truth about the kingdom, the proclamation of what the kingdom functions like, which again was Sermon on the Mount, this is what it looks like to be a part of the kingdom. So when James is talking about quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. That's an example of what it looks like when you belong to the kingdom. That's how you function. So he's clarifying, this is what the way looks like. And anybody who is not in that is wandering away from that. And so it's a little bit like, the old illustration of for the people who are charged with finding counterfeit money, that they know the real thing. That's how you train somebody to spot a counterfeit, is to know the real thing so well that anything else that clashes with that makes you say like, oh, that's not real. You don't have to know all the counterfeit things, like all the ways that people try to make counterfeit money. And then the same way, I wanted to say, okay, if James is warning about wandering, we have to recognize what is wandering, and it's away from this that James has said, not away from what our culture says is Christian or good or moral or ethical, not away from what I have formed for myself, but like, let's look at what James says. This is the way, and this is the way of the kingdom, and wandering looks like that. So that is one thing that I wanted to clarify, was let's know what it is that we're even looking at when we say someone is wandering. Because otherwise you could say, well, that person's really wandered because they vote differently now, like, or whatever. Like, that's not wandering.
Right.
I mean, it could be, like, it could be underneath that could be, you might find wandering, but there's nothing, in scripture that tells us how we're supposed to vote. Like, but how we're supposed to think and how we're supposed to view the world and how we're supposed to view other people and what our sense of responsibility, all of that, it does say things about that. So that's one. And then the other is, then, like you said, being responsible, like, do I know people? Am I in community enough that I understand the power of this communal witness and the importance of it, that it matters if you're wandering, not only for your own soul, but for the communal witness? Like, that's why the church takes it so seriously, is because they know they're protecting a communal witness. This is one of the reasons why Paul says, when somebody is sinning like that repetitively, why we have church discipline, where he says, cast them out. But it's for both them and the good of the church, right? Like, it's protecting the purity of the witness of the church, but it's also for that person's soul. Like he says, it's better that you turn them over for the destruction of their flesh, that their soul might be saved. Like, there's this idea that's the sense of responsibility we feel for one another. And if you don't have that, if church is just a place that you show up for your own personal growth and development, then you're not going to you're not going to be a part of that communal witness. You're not going to see yourself as that, which means you're also not going to be a help to your brothers and sisters if they're wandering, and they're not going to be able to be a help to you if you're wandering. You know, we always said, like, when we did house churches back in Colorado, the best thing about house church is that we knew when people were wandering. Like, it's just obvious. You could see, you know, if they were struggling, if they were struggling in their faith, if they were struggling in their life or whatever, like, we would see it because we sat around the table together. We were in each other's, you know, they were in our living room. We were in their living room. We saw them interact with their kids. We saw them interact with their spouse. We saw them interact with their neighbors. We saw them, like, we just see them. We're immersed in that. And we lose something when the only time we see each other is at corporate worship, you know, like, which is great that we want to see each other. We want to worship together. But if that's it, like, if it's just, I show up and I sit in a row with these people and I go up and even I go up and take communion with them, that gives us a little bit more. Talking to people before and after gives you a little bit more, like, all that gives a little bit more awareness. But ultimately we have to be in each other's lives. And
yeah, we have stronger. To be really intentional. I think that, like, it's really easy. You know, you bring up, like, the Sunday morning thing. It's really easy for somebody to just come in, sit on one corner of the room on a Sunday morning worship and not feel any sort of responsibility ever for somebody who sits on the opposite side of the room. Yet we are all family, right? And so the question then is, like, how do we do that? And not everybody is going to feel that sort of responsibility for everybody in the church, but, like, how do we cultivate those relationships where we do, or where we are feeling responsible for one another, if that makes sense. And like, I think that we do certain things here at Faith to help that, you know, when we do all church things and we're serving all together, I think that helps with those opportunities. I think things like taking communion together, I think things like getting area lunch and connecting with people at area lunches, trying to make connections outside of church, all of those things go towards helping you feel that responsibility that maybe you would get in a home church that you don't necessarily get that you don't explicitly get from a Sunday morning because it's not in a more small, intimate setting.
Yeah, there's lots of studies about diffusion of responsibility, and that's basically it.
Yeah.
If you're in a gathering of anything more than 50 to 70 people, you're not going to feel responsible for others. And if people don't know what diffusion of responsibility is, it's just the idea that the more people who are there, it's like you take, if you put 100% responsibility, the more people that are there, the more that gets divided. And so if there are 10 people, if somebody sees somebody that needs help and there are 10 people standing around, I feel 10% responsible. If I'm the only person standing around and someone needs help, I feel 100%, you know, responsible. Right. So that's oversimplifying it. So then when you're on a Sunday morning and that person that's sitting on across the room and there's hundreds of people there, like you're just the diffusion of responsibility is great. There's so many people between you and them. And if you don't even know them, like, how in the world could you possibly take responsibility? And so then that backs us down into a place where then we don't take responsibility for anyone. And the question is always in any church is, how do you help people figure out, well, then who should I take responsibility for? The problem with that usually is we end up looking for the people we want to take responsibility for. And then now we are getting into the categories of James talking about showing partiality.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's not just partiality of, oh, I'm going to try to be nice to the rich and powerful person. It's also, yeah, I'm going to take responsibility for the people who are easy to take responsibility for, the people that I like immediately hanging out with, people I have a lot of things in common with. There's a sense in which that's natural, and there's a sense in which it's partiality. Because if you only take responsibility for the people who are easy to take responsibility for, then you're immediately going to ignore the people that James says this is true religion. Like, widows and orphans in that time were the people that nobody wanted to take responsibility for. Like, if you're just going to have a draft of, like, all right, we have so many people, everyone needs to have 10 people that they feel responsible for. So let's have a draft. Well,
they were getting picked last.
You're going to have some people there that aren't going to get picked.
Right.
You know, and that shouldn't be the way it is. And so we have to figure out how do you create those environments. Like, we know in culture we have that with blood family. So they talk about, like, friends are the family you get to choose. You're like, whatever. Well, that shows, like, a breakdown in society a little bit, because it is designed, like, you take responsibility for the people that you're blood related to. That allows for the people who are hard to take responsibility for, right? Like, there's an old joke in small group ministry of every small group has a person that requires extra grace. So it was like a term we get used of extra grace required.
A little extra grace, yeah.
Grace required. Well, and then the joke was every small group has one. If you look around and you don't see one, then you're it.
Then you're it, yep.
And it's kind of a funny way of looking at it, like, haha, that's all. But there's a reality to that. And there have been many times in my life where I have been the person that required extra grace. And how do you account for that? How do you actually, like, part of what made the church so, their witness was so powerful was that they cared for people that the world said, like, why are you caring for them? Sometimes it was the least, like, it was the people that had nothing to offer, but sometimes it was different ethnicities. It was like, why would the Jew and the Gentile care about each other like this? Whatever it was, the world looked at it and was like, well, that's weird. It's weird that you're giving your time for that, like, and for that person. And we do that because we're all made in the image of God. We're all image bearers, and who we are here on earth is not who we're going to be one day. And the least are going to become the greatest. It's not even like a paternalistic, patronizing kind of thing. It's like, no, Jesus says those who are the least are going to be the greatest. And so these are going to be the people that in heaven are going to have, like, the faith and be considered great. And, like, I don't really want to have been the one treating them poorly on earth, or, like, thinking, like, oh, you're kind of a nuisance or whatever. Like, that's not who they are. So I don't know. I get on that, like, little rant of trying to figure out, like, this is the code that we try to crack and that churches have been trying to crack forever. And I area lunches are an effort to make that kind of mid-sized gathering where you can feel a sense of responsibility if there's consistency, right? But then that's part of the thing, is there has to be consistency.
Right.
Like, if you show up to an area lunch once every 2 months, like, you're not going to feel known, and you're not going to feel like you know other people.
Right. I have just found that I was going to share this in from the youth ministry perspective. One of the things I love, and it's just I feel like this is a common story. I know it's one that you've experienced before too, where you've had the person who somehow they get roped into helping with, like, a specific event or something like that that requires a little bit of attention, and they see, like, the need to serve that specific age group. And then they're just in. They're in on serving. They're in on being responsible for those people. They're in on, like, on loving them and seeing them as, like, those to take care of. And, like, just thinking back to that diffusion of responsibility, I was thinking, like, we have, you know, you could have a number of teenagers who are in worship on a Sunday morning that you don't feel responsible for at all. And then you get an opportunity to be in a small group with them for an hour. Maybe you, like, spend, you know, you come to Disciple Now or something like that, and you get to hear a little bit of their story, and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, like, I need to invest in this area. We've had that same thing with children's ministry. When we called people to help with children's ministry, we had people who were like, wow, I really see this need, and I see this need to be a part of it. And I think I just want to, like, encourage people to just, if you feel like you don't have anybody that you're responsible for, or you feel like you're not somebody who has those sort of people in your life, to find an outlet to serve in one way or another. And I think, like, those relationships tend to happen. Like, I think that tends to be a natural outcome for that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think a huge obstacle for people is, I mean, one, we have a fear of being known. So we all kind of craft our own little worlds that we're living in, and we don't want anybody to mess with that. And so that is a real thing. And we're trying to deal with that just as a church culture level that again, that goes back to what James says.
Yep.
And so this is who we're called to be. So if you've created your own version of this that is not in line with what James is talking about here, then that's not who we are. And so that's a fear that some people have. And I think we can deal with that at a bigger picture level. But then people have a fear of being known. People have a fear of commitment. Like, we just have this idea that freedom is like total flexibility and having no obligations. And we've said before, and I try to tell my kids that, I tell, like, if you have no obligations, if you have total freedom, and if that to you means you don't ever have to be anywhere, you can be wherever you want, whenever you want, then that means no one's ever counting on you to be anywhere, which means no one is ever counting on you. Like, no one would notice you being gone. And so I know that in youth ministry, for example, those volunteers, like, they give up every Wednesday, you know, and I know because my wife is one of them. And yeah, there are Wednesday afternoons where you're just like, I would not mind a blizzard right now that would cancel this. And yet you wouldn't trade that, like, the impact that you're having. So the enemy wants us to be afraid of commitment and afraid of, like, oh no, then that means I'm, like, hedged in or whatever. Like, yeah, when people count on you, that's a life that has meaning. Right? Like, if nobody's ever counting on you for anything, then what's the purpose? Like, what is your...
That's good. That's good.
Purpose?
Yeah.
And so, and I'm speaking to myself in that, because I definitely wander towards wanting flexibility and freedom, but it's a lie.
It's not freedom, right?
It's, like, not.
I think it is funny to me how Paul uses the language of, we are slaves to sin. I think that there's a truth to that. Like, when we pursue worldly freedom or that flexibility, our tendency is to be insular. And that's oftentimes a breeding ground for temptation and for us to just, to not have anyone who counts on us. And I think there is such truth. I wish I would have wrote down what you just said. I'll have to go back and listen to it again, because it was a really good, Jay. It was really good. What's the point? If you don't have anybody who's counting on you, I can't remember how you finished that, but, like, There is such truth to that you wouldn't trade that when you experience that. And yeah, you do have those moments where you're like, man, it would be really great to have my evening or to have my whatever. But almost every single time, it is far more fruitful. Even in the nights where you leave discouraged, you look back on those nights and you see weeks later or months later, like, the importance behind that.
There's no question that you... like, think about a wedding, for example. If you're going to a wedding, the flexibility and freedom would be that you don't RSVP until the end. But if you're able to do that, then that means no one's going to notice if you're there or not. And that's not really a life that we would say has a lot of purpose or meaning. As opposed to if you're, like, the best man or the, maid of honor or whatever, and you have all this responsibility and all this time that you're committing to it, but it's also it matters, like, that you're there, and, like, your presence and your effort and everything is appreciated and it matters. I think we have this fear of commitment. We have a fear of being inconvenienced. Like, we miss out on the joy of being inconvenienced for the gospel is a powerful thing, because if what we want is to go through and just, like, make things as easy as possible, well, easy is kind of pointless. And but what we want is, like, we want meaning, like, we want purpose, we want our lives to matter, and we think that's going to come through no one ever expecting anything from us and never being inconvenienced.
I love that illustration of the wedding thing too, because when you are asked to be a part of, like, the wedding party, or maybe you're asked to be, like, the best man or maid of honor, like, it's going to cost you, quote unquote, cost you things that are, like, worldly things, time, money, like, it's going to cost you those things, but nobody,
stressful probably.
You're going to have to be this person who, like, they're leaned on during this season. But we don't look at that and we don't go, oh, that's such a bummer. Like, what could you imagine if, like, we lived in a society where you're like, oh yeah, I got asked to be my brother's,
But I think we do that. Haven't you ever heard somebody complain? Like, you don't when you get asked. So, like, when you get asked, it's a huge honor.
Yeah.
But haven't you ever heard anybody complain about, like, oh, I got my brother's wedding next weekend and I still have all this stuff.
Right, but
I
they
do
that. They do that when they, like, when they're attending it, not when they're, like, not when they have some sort of, like, active involvement in it.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a time, I'm just saying, like, the misnomer is we also complain. We complain about our lives having meaning, basically.
We do.
We just complain. And I think, like, okay, well, what's the alternative? Right. Like, so I found myself doing that of like just perspective, right? So I found myself on Saturday. I love college football. Okay. Yeah. So Saturday though, I preach most Sundays. So that means Saturday evening is not like, it's not college football time.
Right,
it's not
right.
date night. It's like, I go to bed early. I have to like wind down. I have to make sure that I'm usually going over my sermon prep and doing a little bit more on Saturday evening or whatever. And I have had the thought in my head of like, I just wish, like, why can't I watch college football game like a normal person? Now, step back from that for a second and realize
how normal people don't watch college football, Jay.
Well, okay. But how moronic is that statement?
Yeah.
That I've called myself on that, saying like, okay, so you would rather your life be about you get to watch this random college football game that you don't even care about either of the teams, and that life is going to be one of more value and more meaning than the fact that God has called you, for whatever reason, has called you to be the person to proclaim God, his word tomorrow to your family. It's nonsense, right? And I see that in people who volunteer and serve. Like we have a couple of people in our church. We have several people in our church that do this on a weekly basis where they give of their time. They give in a way that they are inconvenienced for the sake of the kingdom. And some of them do it in ways that nobody ever notices. Like we have people who go to the prison and go and share the gospel, and they go, like, we've got people who, like, right when they get off work, they go and they do that. And like, when most people are thinking, I want to go home and, you know, put my feet up or whatever, like we have people who are then going immediately to the homeless shelter or immediately to the jail. And I think that's really powerful. I saw it last night. I wish I could give more details of the illustration, but last night I'm literally able to proclaim the goodness of God and his kingdom because somebody in our church was in a situation where they were choosing to be inconvenienced for the sake of the kingdom. Like, people are looking at that person saying, why would you put yourself in this position? And the answer was, because Jesus.
Yep. Yep.
And to be able to point to that and say, that's a really good question. Why would that person drive all this way when they have they have no responsibility to do this, like no worldly responsibility, no reason outside of the kingdom. They're not getting any kind of kudos for this. Like, it was a difficult situation, which is why people were wondering, like, why would you do that to yourself? You get no immediate gratification, no pat on the back, no nothing. Well, why? Because the kingdom. Like, there's no other reason. There's no other reason than you believe, like, you're storing up treasures in heaven and it's worth it because, like, the situation. Those are the kinds of things, man, that I just think are powerful when we choose to be inconvenienced. We choose to commit to people, to loving people, you know, and to serving them and to being present. And to your point, like, as a church, we try to do that as simply as possible. This is why we don't have a big menu of all these programs and all these things, because that requires a lot of energy to and time to put those things on, basically to just, it's not what we're called fully to do. Like, I love it that we have people who study the Bible together, but we don't create a bunch of Bible studies for people to just be involved in. We want them to study the Bible together, but we also want them to be in the community loving people, and we want to equip them to do that. And so we try to make it really simple so that you're not overthinking and spending all your time wondering which Bible study should I be a part of. So we just say, hey, come to area lunch. Like, I don't know how much simpler we can make it of, like, if this is your community, you can go to any area lunch you want to. Like, we're not, like we say before, like, we don't check IDs. You don't have to bring your utility bill to prove that you live in a particular area. Come to any area lunch we want. We're just trying to help you by saying, look, you don't know what to do. Once a month, stay after church, commit to it. Commit to it for a year. That's 12 lunches after Sunday to just be there every time. And to say, I'm going to invest in somebody. I'm going to connect with people, and I'm going to take responsibility for just being there and loving people who are there. and see what happens. And if everybody did that and just gathered together with the people in their community, shared stories and prayed together, like, I think you'd be amazed at how much deeper a sense of community would be. And how many, and then if, and then the idea was always off of those to have these offshoots where you might notice somebody that God has put, you know, across from you at lunch, and you just say to them, you know, hey, I, you know, maybe it's an older woman sitting across from a younger woman and just offering, you know, hey, can we, let's get together for the next few weeks. Can I just, or can I come over to your house once a month and, you know, and watch your kids for you, and then just so you can have some time, like whatever the case is, like out of that can come some really beautiful, discipling opportunities and encouragement.
I mean, that's how we live as people called to, be what James has called us throughout the course of his letter. And I think, yeah, that's a great avenue is area lunch. I would even challenge people to, one of the things I have loved is just spending time after church on Sunday morning, just talking with people, just sitting there and chatting with people. But that's how we do it, right? That's how we cultivate those sort of relationships or opportunities to have that responsibility for one another, which to me, and I think that was kind of what we were trying to talk about for this podcast, was for me, wrapping up James. Yeah. Was just the necessity of us doing this together. It is a team sport. Christianity is a team sport. We need to be doing this together. We need to be on mission together. We need to be caring for one another. We need to be loving one another. And by doing that, we are able to do when James does call us to bring back the one who is wandering. We're able to do that when we are able to reach the orphan and the widow, when we are able to be those people. It's when we are doing it together, not on our own.
Yeah. And you know what, before we land the plane here, I thought of one other area where we could do this. And that is like where you sit on Sunday mornings.
Oh yeah.
So it's funny that I have a lot of people who say to me like, oh, I'm trying to move around, you know, and sit in different places so I can get to know different people. I think that's great. If that's your wiring and that's your gifting and you want to bounce around, do that. But there's also real value in the people who sit in the same places every time. And I know that gets a bad rap because of the old thing of like, oh, you have reserved seats. And if you sit in somebody's seat, then they're going to get mad. And I get that. That's not happening. I think the positive that can come out of it is you notice when somebody is new. Like if you sit in the same place every time, then when somebody comes in and sits, then you know when they're new. And when they're new, you can talk to them. And when somebody is always sitting in the same spot and then they're not there and they haven't been there for a while, you notice that. Mm-hmm. So I would just encourage you that if you are wired to be the person that likes to go around to other sections and get to know the people that are there, do it. Have total freedom. This is why it's a team sport. Not everybody has to do what you do, and you don't have to do what everybody else does. But if you are the type of person that feels really comfortable just being in the same spot, and that, then be hospitable in that spot.
Yeah, right? You've said that before of just owning it, right? Yeah, like owning that area. I love the idea of being hospitable in that area. And then, yeah, like you said, to notice and take responsibility of those who are around you. I think that's really beautiful. And that can be a really beautiful thing for those who just kind of have their own little, not their own little section. I don't want to say that in a way that sounds like I'm downplaying, because I think that's beautiful. I think it could be a really cool thing.
Yeah. It's a great example of how we can show that in and of itself, it could be, it's neutral. Like having your own section is in and of itself, like, is neutral. The question is it for Christ and his kingdom, or is it for yourself? So right. If it's for yourself, that's when you get into the, like, this is my section.
Yeah. If it's just for comfort's sake.
I don't want anybody else to sit here. I don't want anybody to sit in my row. I don't want anyone to sit in front of me. Like I always sit here, and that's obviously perverted and sinful. But if you are seeing it as like, this is my section, and therefore I feel a sense of responsibility to welcome the new person, or to notice if somebody is, is having a hard time during communion, for example, or struggling or whatever, to put a hand on a shoulder, to offer prayer or whatever, like that's a really beautiful thing for you to say, I feel a sense of responsibility for these few rows, you know, around me. That would be really incredible. So I don't know, we're going to keep trying to figure out ways to help people, and we just want to create environments for people. I can't, you know, we talk about this, we've started talking about this more, and it's been really on my mind of like, we want the obstacles to that kind of community are often that people are afraid, or they don't know how, or they lack desire. And as a church family, we want to address those first two. We want to help people understand how they can connect, and we want to give them courage to do so, to help them know, hey, it's okay. You can come to the area lunch. No, it's not weird. Like, you're not, no one's going to look at you weird. Like, why are you there? Or anything like that, to help people understand and to give them courage. But we can't address the desire. Like, I can't make somebody want to be in community if they don't actually want to be. God's word and the Holy Spirit can do that. That's why we proclaim it the way that we do and try to and trust him with that and say, like, this is the picture of the kingdom. And then, do you want that? And that's a matter of the Spirit transforming our heart and our desire together as a family.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's a good place to land.
To land that plane. All right, well, hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving and looking forward now to starting Advent coming up on Sunday. So hopefully we will see you with us on Sunday morning. I hope this has been helpful. We're thankful that you took the time to listen. Until next time, grace and peace.